Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. Gopichana Balaba Girivadadhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. Gopichana Balaba Girivadadhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvajakacharya Asatarasata Sri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai Premsiko Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Dwarka Dham Ki Jai Gangamayi Ki Jai, Yumunamayi Ki Jai, Srimati Tulasi Devi Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Garanga, glories to Sri the Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Today we're going to read texts 7, 8, and 9. 7 and 8 have no purport, so I'll read them myself, and then we'll chant together text 9. So, text 7. Atatra pitihaso yam shrutome varnita pura brahmana deva devena devana manuprichatam. Translation. The history of the fight between the Lord as a boar and the demon Hiranyaksha was heard by me in a year long ago, as it was described by the foremost of the demigods, Brahma, when he was questioned by the other demigods. Text 8. Jitir Dakshayani Chantar Madi Cham Kashyapam Patim Apatya Kama Chakame Sanjayam Richchayardita. Translation. Diti, daughter of Daksha, being afflicted with sex desire, begged her husband Kashyapa, the son of Marichi, to have intercourse with her in the evening in order to beget a child. Text 9. Ishvagni Jivam Payasa Purusham Yajusham Patim Nimlochatyarka Asinam Agnyagare Samahitam Ishtagni Jivam Payasa Purusham Yajusham Patim Nimlochatyarka Asinam Agnyagare Samahita Ishtagni Jivam Payasa Purusham Yajusham Patim Nimlochatyarka Asinam Agnyagare Samahitam Ishtagni Jivam Payasa Purusham Yajusham Patim Nimlochatyarka Asinam Agnyagre Samahitam. Purusham Yajusham Patim Vaishnavis. Ishva, after worshiping, Agni, fire, Jivam, tongue, Payasa, by oblation, Purusham, unto the Supreme Person, Yadrusham, of all sacrifices, Patim, master, Nimlochiti, while sitting, Arke, the sun, Asinam, sitting, Agni Agare, in the sacrificial hall, Samahitam, completely in trance. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The sun was setting and the sage was sitting in trance after offering oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, whose tongue is the sacrificial fire. Purport. Fire is considered to be the tongue of the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and oblations of grains and clarified butter offered in the fire are thus accepted by him. That is the principle of all sacrifices of which Lord Vishnu is the master. In other words, the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu includes the satisfaction of all demigods and other living beings. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we see mentioned in these, this translation and purport, human beings, demigods, Lord Vishnu, and sacrifice. In the Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, Krishna says, Sahayagya Prajashrishtva Purvacha Prajapatihi. It means, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of humans and demigods along with sacrifice, yajna. And he said, perform this yajna and you'll be happy. If you perform sacrifice to me, you'll be happy because by this you'll live very happily in this world. You'll have all your material necessities. And at the same time, you'll make progress towards going back home, back to Godhead. So that is actually the purpose of this whole universe or group of universes that exist, and we exist in one of them. The purpose is that we learn to perform sacrifice for Vishnu, live in this world very nicely, and make progress towards joining Krishna's eternal pastimes on the spiritual level of reality. Srila Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport that the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna is the purpose of all yajna or sacrifice. So Krishna himself states that in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He says, I am the enjoyer of sacrifice, all sacrifices and austerities. Everything should be performed as an offering unto him. Yat karoshi yada yajjuho. Tat karusha madarpanam. All activities should be performed as an offering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, yagnartat karmanonyatra lokoyam kamabandhanaha. If one doesn't perform everything as an offering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, understanding that everything is his energy, we are his energy, then one remains entangled in the cycle of karma, and one has to accept the reactions to one's activities. So it's interesting. You know, Krishna says in the beginning he sends forth generations of humans and demigods, and along with sacrifice. I notice that he says in the very beginning. That means human beings have been present since the beginning. Demigods have been present since the beginning. Sacrifice, the performance of devotional service, has been present since the beginning of the universe. And the universe, the universes, I should say, emanate from an expansion of Krishna called Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu lies in the causal ocean, sleeping, dreaming. When he breathes out, the universes expand from his body. When he breathes in, they contract back into his body. So when they expand, he injects by his glance jiva souls into each universe. And then he expands into each universe to accompany the jiva souls as the Garbhadakshai Vishnu. And from the Garbhadakshai Vishnu, a lotus emerges from the navel, and Lord Brahma, the first created living entity in the universe, emerges. And Brahma creates the bodies and the planets where he creates the bodies that the conditioned souls will inhabit, And he also creates the different locations or lokas, planetary systems, where they will reside. So we're all in one of those many millions of universes that have emerged from the Mahavishnu, from Mahavishnu during his current exhalation, his breath. And we're in human bodies that were manifested for us by Lord Brahma using plans that have eternally existed coming from Krishna. It's not that he's inventing anything new. He's making use of plans that have plans for bodies, human bodies, demigod bodies, plant bodies, animal bodies. Those plans are originally coming from Krishna. He's just manifesting them, and we are conditioned souls that have been placed into human bodies, which is our good fortune, because it's in the human body that it's possible to understand these things and act upon them. So we're not accidental creatures in an accidental universe, as modern science would have us believe. And there is a definite purpose to human life, and that is to perform yajna or sacrifice for Vishnu, and to go back to Godhead. Because that's our natural environment. This environment here is not the natural environment of the soul. The soul is by nature Satchidananda, as Krishna is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge, and full of ever-increasing spiritual enjoyment and pleasure. So that is the natural environment of the soul. And therefore, we don't feel comfortable in this material world because everything here is temporary, it's full of ignorance, and it's full of suffering. Janma mrityu jaravyati dukkha dosha anudarshanam. So, I mean, Krishna could have sent forth generations of human beings and demigods with anything, but he could have sent them with smartphones. Enjoy these smartphones. No, he sent forth generations of humans and demigods with sacrifice. So that's what Kashyapa. So Kashyapa is performing sacrifice, and he's about to be approached by his wife, Diti, who is mentioned in the previous verse, text 8. Diti, the daughter of Daksha, being afflicted with sex desire, begged her husband, Kashyapa, to have a child. So this is something that we all have to deal with. Everyone has to make some accommodation with sex desire. And there are so many accounts in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the dealings between husbands and wives, you know, male and female. And they're very instructive. You know, if we take the lessons from them, or the examples, the positive, many positive examples that are given. So this is the relationship between Diti and Kashyapa is going to be explained in the coming verses. And elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, we have the account of Kardama and Devahuti and their relationship and what happened with them. And then, you know, we have also the account of Nanda and Yashoda and their different births. So there are many accounts of how devotees deal with these things. Another thing that got my attention in this verse and purport was the a description of fire being the tongue of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So, Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that, therefore, through fire, the Lord accepts the taste of the offerings, the sacrificial offerings that are being made to him. But for us, the jiva, or tongue, is something different. Every day we're chanting that prayer before we take prasadam. Sarira avidya jal indriya te kal jive file visaya sagare tarmade jivayati loba moisa durmati. I don't know if everybody who says those words in the Bengali knows what they mean, but O Lord, this body is a lump of ignorance, the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Somehow or other we fall into this ocean of material sense gratification. Of all the senses, the tongue is most voracious and difficult to control. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a pretty stark verse. I mean, we just say it, you know, okay, let me. But that's what the prasadam is there for. The prayer goes on to say, you know, to thank, you know, Krishna for mercifully giving us prasadam. Because controlling the senses by engaging them with spiritual sense objects rather than material sense objects is the foundation of our practice of bhakti yoga, of Krishna consciousness. And it said if you can control the tongue, it becomes easier to control the other senses. So the way that we control the tongue is by taking Krishna prasadam and by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and speaking the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So being a yogi means controlling the senses one after another, controlling the tongue and the belly, which makes it easier to control the senses related to sex desire. All the senses, they can either be used in such a way that they keep us entangled in the cycle of birth and death, or they can be used in such a way as to put us on the path of going to the spiritual world. So even sex desire can be used in Krishna's service. Dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that he is sex life that is not contrary to religious principles. So that means having some discipline in confining that activity to marriage, basically. Of course, there are some refinements in the Varnashram system. Some, you know, for Kshatriyas, they're allowed to have relations under other circumstances. But according to time, place, and circumstance, the religious principles are explained and established by great acharyas. So our founder acharya has established the principles that we follow: no illicit sex, we vow at the time of initiation. So these are some of the things that drew my attention going through these verses and purports here. Any? Yes, Brigapati.
Yeah, it's mentioned in the purport, and you also commented upon it, that fire is considered the tongue of Vishnu, and you can offer
sacrificial fire.
Sacrificial tongue of Lord Vishnu. You can offer the oblations by ghee and grains. So I acknowledge that a fire sacrifice is a good draw card. You know, when we do a fire sacrifice, it does tend to attract people to come over and, you know, participate. Aside from just offering oblations into that fire, they're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and other mantras. So my question is this, though, that in the shastras it does say that in the age of Kali, the only sacrifice that's meant to be performed is the Sankirtan Yajna. So when we do a fire sacrifice and we're offering grains and ghee into a fire that we've lit, is there any transcendental benefit to that? Or is the only thing that it's, as I said, it's a good draw card? It's getting people over there to chant Hare Krishna. Or is there actually any benefit, as it was in previous ages apparently, of offering the grains and the ghee into the sacrificial fire? The questions make sense?
Yes, okay, yep. It does. Okay. But, you know, how to know how to answer it. I go by the principle that, you know, Srila Prabhupada was the founder acharya of ISKCON, and his example is the way to understand what principles are applicable in our age. We could also say the same thing about deity worship. Yeah, that's the mode of worship from the Dwapara Yuga. So, if it was introduced by our acharyas, it's relevant. But we have to understand what they have actually said about it and what they introduced. Like Srila Prabhupada said about deity worship, if I told you everything that was involved, you'd faint. So he introduced a certain standard of deity worship, and we do it. Plus, our other previous acharyas, like Rupa Goswami, you know, Srila Prabhupada, and Jiva Goswami, they're quoted by Srila Prabhupada in our books, explaining that the Krishna consciousness movement in the present age runs on two tracks. You know, one is the Bhagavad Vidhi, and the other is the Panchratriki Vidhi. So Bhagavad Vidhi means simply hearing and chanting and distributing books, perhaps. And I'm going to get to you, Svabhaspura, just one more sentence. So, in the Krishna consciousness movement as it's been given to us, fire sacrifice is there in the initiation ceremony particularly, and also deity installations. And the deity worship is there, and meditation is there. Yeah, we meditate on the Gayatri Mantra. But it's all part of the Sankirtan movement, meant to... Okay, Svabhaspura.
Well, you answered it already, but I'll just say something. I was just reading a conversation by Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying that these ritualistic ceremonies are actually beneficial for people because it creates purification. And then he also said about the installation of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan, that they had to invite the brahmanas of the local, you know, the local chapter there for them to come. And there were so many verses chanted, mantras chanted, and there was fire yajna. And it was, although it's not the ultimate of Kali Yuga, but it does help in terms of purification. But they're not the end point. But they do, Prabhupada said that they do become purified by these activities of yajnas, you know, and mantra meditation, chanting. So we do it here in New Dwarka because it draws people. It gives some purification. You know, if you're there at the Jagya, I go to the Jagyas and I even feel purification. I feel really nice chanting the mantras or hearing the thousand names of Vishnu and saying Swaha into the fire. It's ritualistic and it's not the end point, but it's very beneficial in terms of purification. And for a lot of people, that's a big event because throughout the day, they're doing so many other crazy things and distractions. So, that's the purpose. And another thing, too, is that I read was Prabhupada was talking about, or he was having a conversation, I think it was with Garga Muni. And in that conversation, Garga Muni was talking about prasadam distribution. And I believe it was, I can't remember if it was Garga Muni now, but it was a devotee. And Prabhupada was saying that, yes, prasadam distribution is very important. It's very, very important. And then he just went on further to say that especially prasadam, is very important for a devotee that wants to give up sense gratification. Because if one eats prasadam, or you distribute prasadam to the masses of people, it's spiritualized food. If they eat it, they become purified. And so when we distribute prasadam, it has to be offered to the deity. When we eat that prasadam, we become purified. And Prabhupada said that is the key element for purification, is to eat prasadam that's been offered to the deity. And that way we become purified. And we won't become attracted to the sense gratification of the material world. Otherwise, Prabhupada said this food is simply makes one strong and increases one's desire for sense gratification if it's not offered to the deity. So I thought that was pretty profound, considering that, you know, we should be very careful ourselves at what we take and what we offer to Krishna. And we'll see what happens in terms of how and what we become after eating that particular food.
Yes, we'll see. Arshita.
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. The main point that you made, maybe some people didn't pick up, is that things have to be authorized. Because there are many people who think they're worshiping deities. They establish so-called established deity worship in their homes. They dress the deities once a week. The rest of the week they're gathering dust. You know, so Prabhupada didn't approve that. When devotees started wanting to worship their own deities here in New Dwarka, Prabhupada discouraged them. He said, come and participate in deity worship here. Because if you worship deities at home, it has to be to the same standard as a temple. Otherwise, you're committing offense. So a lot of devotees didn't take that seriously, and they fall into that. I've told the story before, but there was one brahmachari here who decided he wanted to worship Shalagram Shila. And he was taking the Shila everywhere, to the bathroom, to the beach, everywhere. And literally, within a few months, he fell down. Because that's offensive. We're not on that platform like Sanatana Goswami, where we can take the deity everywhere in a basket and give him dry chapatis to eat. We can't do that. So we have to be very careful. Everything has to be authorized. So it's the same thing with the fire sacrifice. We have a society, we have a deity worship ministry, and they set the guidelines for how to perform these Agnihotras. And if you do it the proper way, like we have a head pujari here who installs a fire properly and chants the right mantras when making the lions, and it's not just ritual, it's an approved process. So everything we do has to be approved. And then when it comes to prasadam, you just mentioned about offering to the deity, and so I said that also. But we should not minimize the fact that you can offer directly to your spiritual master. Because sometimes, like our devotees are traveling on Sankirtan, they can't necessarily take deities. Prabhupada said these books are your deities. And he also said if you chant the pranam mantras to your spiritual master three times, it's offered. So we, you know, because sometimes devotees, of course, if we're in a situation like here, we have deities on the altar, we should try to offer everything to the deities. We should try to do that. But sometimes one may have to offer just to the spiritual master. And we should not make such a, you know, make somebody feel guilty that they can't offer to deity and therefore it's not prasadam. It's not a fact. You offer to your spiritual master and the idea that it's then offered up the chain to Krishna. Whether you're on the altar, at home, wherever, that's the process. You offer to your spiritual master, who offers to his guru, and it goes to Krishna. So if we can do it nicely here in the temple, yes, fine. But if you're traveling or whatever, you're in some circumstance, you have to offer just to your spiritual master. It is still prasadam. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, you were mentioning about the natural environment. The natural environment. So we are living in a very unnatural environment. All these cities were created artificially. So when Lord Krishna says Saha Yagya Prayasista at the beginning, men and demigods should cooperate together to perform this yagya because this will bring you happiness and prosperity. I was just picturing, would that be only to the few brahmanas at that particular time or for every living being there? Because the environment was more natural. They were not living in like in big cities with, you know, like now technology. So it looks like it could be more easy. The environment was more natural. But now, it's just a few devotees like we have here maybe any temple, ISKCON temple or any Vaishnava temple, you only find like maybe 10, 20, maybe some temples 50 or 100 compared to the billions of peoples, billions living, who live in a very unnatural situation. So, can you say something about it?
It's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita says, he sent forth generations of men, by which is meant human beings, you know, like generations of them. So it appears he's speaking about all that will exist in this world, all who will exist in this material world. It's for them. But each jiva soul has free will, and if they misuse their free will voluntarily, they're doing it, then they remain here. It's by their choice. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says of many thousands of people, only a few are striving for the truth. And of those that are striving, only one knows me in truth. So Krishna is merciful to these conditioned souls, because he could just keep them in a state of suspended animation, susupti, but he gives them the chance to act, and he does everything possible to give them the opportunity to use their free will properly. He comes himself, he sends spiritual masters, he sends his shastras, you know, the Bhagavatam, the Gita. He's doing everything he can to allow people to make the right choice. He puts them, you know, there's a cycle of yugas. So in Satya Yuga, everything is very nice. There aren't any big cities. There aren't any social divisions, class divisions. You know, everyone has the opportunity to advance spiritually. And if they don't take advantage of that, then there's the next stage, the Treta Yuga, where settlements, you know, settled villages and towns begin to manifest, the different varnas and classes begin to manifest, a little bit of conflict begins to manifest. And then in the next stage, it's even worse. There's bigger conflicts. And then the next stage, Kali Yuga, the one we're in, is for whoever's left over. You know, if you get out in the Satya Yuga, finds more people get out of the material world during Treta Yuga, then more get out in Dwapara Yuga, then whoever's left is there in the Kali Yuga. So there's so many arrangements that Krishna makes, but he doesn't force anyone. He can't force anyone. So if anyone is still in the material world, it's because of their exercise of free will, their causeless unwillingness to do what's necessary to transcend all of this, and they remain in this uncomfortable environment. So, speaking of prasadam, let's go.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavat Purana ki jai.